Just as a personality structure can be disclosed through psychoanalysis, the shape of a scene's inner life can be uncovered through a similar inquiry. If we ask the right questions, a scene which speeds past in the reading and hides its flaws breaks into ultra-slow motion, opens up, and reveals its secrets. If you feel a scene plays, don't fix what works. But often a first draft falls flat or seems forced. Our tendency, then, is to rewrite dialogue, hoping that by paraphrasing speeches we can bring it to life until we hit a dead end. For the problem won't be in the scene's activity, but in its action, not in how the characters are talking or behaving on the surface, but in what they're doing behind their masks. Beats build scenes, and the flaws of an ill-designed scene are in these exchanges of behavior. To find out why a scene fails, the whole must be broken into its parts. An analysis begins, therefore, by separating the scene's text from its subtext. Text means the sensory surface of a work of art, what we see and hear, what is said and done. Subtext is the real thoughts and feelings, conscious and unconscious, that live under what is said and done. An old Hollywood expression goes, "If the scene is about what the scene is about, you're in deep shit." It means writing on the nose, writing dialogue and action in which a character's deepest thoughts and feelings are expressed by what the character says and does, writing the subtext directly into the text. Writing this, for example. Two attractive people sit opposite each other at a candlelit table, the light glinting off the crystal wine glasses and the dewy eyes of the lovers. Soft breezes billow the curtains. A Chopin nocturne plays in the background. The lovers reach across the table, touch hands, look longingly into each other's eyes, and say, "I love you, I love you," and actually mean it. This is an unactable scene and will die like a rat in the road. Actors are not marionettes to mime gestures and mouth words. They're artists who create with material in the subtext, not the text. An actor brings a character to life from the inside out, from unspoken, even unconscious thoughts and feelings out to the surface of behavior. How then might we write a love scene? Let two people change the tire on a car. Let the scene be a virtual textbook on how to fix a flat. Let all the dialogue and action be about the jack, wrench, hubcap, and lug nuts. Hand me that, would you? Watch out. Whoops, don't get dirty. Let me help. The actors will bring to life the real action, the falling in love, underneath everything they're saying and doing. So leave room for them to bring romance to life wholly from the inside. The scene is not about what the scene is about. It's about something else. And it's that something else that brings it to life and gives it truth. This principle of subtext does not mean that people are insincere. The truth is that it's impossible for anyone to fully express what's going on inside. No matter how desperately we wish to manifest our deepest feelings, it's not possible. We can never fully express the truth, for in fact, we do not know it. Consider psychoanalysis. A patient lays on a couch, pouring his heart out, wanting to be understood, no holds barred, no intimacy too private to reveal. And as he rips terrible thoughts and desires to the surface, what does the analyst do? Quietly nod and take notes. And what's in those notes? What is not being said? The secret unconscious truths that lie behind the patient's gut-wrenching confession. Nothing is what it seems, no text without a subtext. To analyze a scene, it must be parsed into its patterns of behaviors at the levels of both text and subtext. Once properly examined, its flaws become vividly clear. Here is a 5-step process designed to make a scene give up its secrets. Step 1. Define conflict. First ask, who drives the scene, motivates it, and makes it happen? Desire is always the key. Phrase these desires as an infinitive, such as to do this, or to get that, whatever it may be. Next, look across the scene and ask, what forces of antagonism block this desire? Again, these forces may come from any level or combination. After identifying the source of antagonism, ask, what does the force of antagonism want? This, too, is best expressed as an infinitive, not to do that, or to get this instead. In a well-composed scene, these desires will be in direct conflict. Step 2, note opening values. Identify the values at stake in the scene and note their charge, positive or negative, at the opening of the scene. Step 3, break the scene into beats. A beat is an exchange of action, reaction, and character behavior. Look carefully at the scene's first action on two levels. Outwardly, in terms of what the character seems to be doing, and, more importantly, look beneath the surface to what he or she is actually doing. Name both actions with an active gerund phrase such as begging. Try to find phrases that not only indicate action, but touch the feelings of the character. Pleading, for example, suggests a character acting with a sense of formality, whereas groveling at her feet conveys a desperate servility. The phrases that express the action in the subtext do not describe character activity in literal terms. They go deeper to name the character's essential action with emotive connotations. Now look across the scene to see what reaction that action brought, and describe that reaction with an active gerund phrase, for example, ignoring the plea. This exchange of action-reaction is a beat. As long as it continues, as long as character A is groveling at her feet, but character B is ignoring the plea, it's one beat. Even if their exchange repeats a number of times, it's still one and the same beat. A new beat doesn't occur until behavior clearly changes. Analyze that next beat for action-reaction, giving it two active phrases, then move through the scene in this fashion to the last beat. Step 4, note closing values and compare with the opening values. At the end of the scene, examine the value charge condition of the character situation and describe it in positive-negative terms. Compare this note to the one made in Step 2. If the two notations are the same, the activity between them is a non-event. If, on the other hand, the value has undergone change, then the scene has turned. Step 5. Survey beats and locate turning point. Start with the opening beat and review the gerund phrases describing the actions of the characters. As you trace action-reaction to the end of the scene, a shape or pattern should emerge. In a well-designed scene, even behaviors that seem helter-skelter will have an arc and a purpose. In fact, in such scenes, it's their careful design that makes the beat seem random. Within the arc, locate the moment when the major gap opens between expectation and result, turning the scene to its changed end value. This precise moment is the turning point. An analysis of the design of a scene from Casablanca illustrates this technique. Casablanca's mid-act climax is played with a unity of time and place that puts emphasis on personal conflict and expresses its primary action verbally. The setup. Rick Blaine, an anti-fascist freedom fighter, and Ilse Lund, a Norwegian expatriate, meet in Paris in 1940. They fall in love and begin an affair. He asks her to marry him, but she avoids an answer. Rick is on the Gestapo arrest list. On the eve of the Nazi invasion, the lovers agree to meet at a train station and escape the city together. But Ilse doesn't show. Instead, she sends a note saying she loves Rick, but will never see him again. A year later, Rick runs a cafe in Casablanca. He's become an isolate, determinedly neutral, uninvolved in all matters personal and political. As he says, I stick my neck out for no man. He drinks too much and feels as if he's killed his former self. Then Ilse walks in on the arm of Victor Laszlo, a renowned resistance leader. The lovers meet again, Behind their cocktail chat, their passion is palpable. Ilsa leaves with Laszlo, but Rick sits in the dark cafe, drinking through the night, waiting. Hours after midnight, she reappears. By now, Rick is very maudlin and equally drunk. Ilsa tells him, guardedly, that she admires but doesn't love Laszlo. Then, before she can tell him that she loves him, Rick, in drunken bitterness, belittles her story by comparing it to one told in a brothel. Staring at her with a twisted smile, he adds insult to injury. "Tell me, who'd you leave me for? Was it Laszlo, or were there others in between, or aren't you the kind that tells?" This slur, implying she's a whore, sends her out the door as he collapses in drunken tears. The mid-act climax. The next day, Ilsa and Laszlo go in search of black market exit visas. While Laszlo tries to make a deal in a cafe, Ilsa waits at a linen stall on the street. Seeing her alone, Rick approaches. Step 1, define conflict. Rick initiates and drives the scene. Despite inner conflict over the pain he suffered since she abandoned him in Paris and the anger he suppresses at seeing her with another man, Rick's desire is clear: to win Ilsa back. His source of antagonism is equally clear: Ilsa. Her feelings are very complex and clouded by mixed emotions of guilt, regret, and duty. She loves Rick passionately and would go back to him if she could, but for reasons only she knows, she can't. Caught between irreconcilable needs, Ilsa's desire can best be phrased as to keep her affair with Rick in the past and move on with her life. Although entangled with inner conflicts, their desires are in direct opposition. Step 3. Break the scene into beats. Beat number 1. Exterior, bazaar, linen stall. The sign over the Arab vendor's stall reads lingerie. Vendor's action, selling. He shows Ilsa a lace bedsheet. Arab, dialogue. You'll not find a treasure like this in all Morocco, mademoiselle. Rick's action, approaching her. Ilsa's reaction, ignoring him. Without looking, Ilsa senses Rick's presence. She feigns interest in the lace. The vendor holds up a sign reading 700 francs. Arab, dialogue. Only 700 francs. Beat number 2. Rick's action, protecting her. Rick, dialogue. You're being cheated. Ilsa's reaction, rejecting Rick's advance. Ilsa takes a second to compose herself. She glances at Rick, then with polite formality turns to the vendor. Ilsa, dialogue. It doesn't matter, thank you. To win Ilsa away from Laszlo, Rick's first task is to break the ice. No easy task given the recriminations and angry emotions of their last scene. His warning seems to insult the Arab vendor, who takes no offense. But in the subtext, Rick's words hint at more, her relationship with Laszlo. Beat number 3, Arab, dialogue. Ah, the lady is a friend of Rick's. For friends of Rick, we have a small discount. 700 francs, did I say? The vendor holds up a new sign. Arab, dialogue. You can have it for 200. Rick's action, apologizing. Rick, dialogue. I'm sorry I was in no condition to receive visitors when you called on me last night. Ilsa's reaction, rejecting him again. Ilsa, dialogue. It doesn't matter. Arab, dialogue. Ah, for special friends of Rick's, we have a special discount. He replaces the second sign with a third, reading 100 francs. Rick's protective action of the first beat comes naturally. The apology in the second beat is more difficult and rare. He masks his embarrassment by using excessive formality to make light of it. Ilsa is unmoved. Beat number 4. Rick's action, excuse-making. Rick, dialogue. Your story left me a little confused, or maybe it was the bourbon. Arab, dialogue. I have some tablecloths, some napkins. Ilsa's reaction, rejecting Rick for the third time. Ilsa, dialogue. Thank you, I'm really not interested. The vendor quickly leaves. Arab, dialogue. Only a moment, please. The Arab vendor enriches the scene in a number of ways. He opens it in a comic tone to counterpoint a dark ending. He sells lace, which adds connotations of weddings and the sexuality of lingerie. Most importantly, however, he tries to sell Rick to Ilsa. The vendor's first line declares Rick a treasure. To demonstrate the power of Rick, the vendor drops his price for friends of Rick's. Then, hearing something about last night, the vendor cuts it even more for special friends of Rick's. This is followed by Rick's second reference to his drinking, as he tries to make this take the blame for his insulting behavior. Ilsa will hear none of it, and yet she stands and waits, and it's safe to assume she's not waiting to buy lace. Beat number 5. A small silence as she pretends to examine the lace goods. Rick's action? Getting his foot in the door. Rick, dialogue. Why'd you come back? To tell me why you ran out on me at the railway station? Ilsa's reaction. Opening the door a crack. Ilsa, dialogue. Yes. After hearing no 4 times in a row, Rick wants her to say yes to anything. So he asks a question that supplies its own answer. Her quiet yes opens the door, keeping the chain on, perhaps, but indicating she's willing to talk. Beat number 6. Rick's action, getting down on his knees. Rick, dialogue. Well, you can tell me now I'm reasonably sober. Ilsa's reaction, asking for more. Ilsa, dialogue. I don't think I will, Rick. The taciturn Rick insults himself over his drinking for the 3rd time. In his tough guy manner, this is begging, and it works. Ilsa demurs, opposing him in a mild, polite way, yet continuing her lace-buying guise. To paraphrase her subtext, that begging was nice for a change. Could I hear a little more, please? Beat number 7. Rick's action, guilt-tripping her. Rick, dialogue. Why not? After all, I was stuck with the railway ticket. I think I'm entitled to know. Ilsa's reaction, guilt-tripping him right back. Ilsa, dialogue. Last night I saw what happened to you. The Rick I knew in Paris, I could tell him. He'd understand. But the Rick who looked at me with such hatred. These 2 people have a relationship. Each feels that they're the injured party, and each knows the sensitivity of the other so well that they hurt each other with ease. Beat number 8. Ilsa's action, saying goodbye. She turns and looks at Rick. Ilsa, dialogue. I'll be leaving Casablanca soon. We'll never see each other again. We knew very little about each other when we were in love in Paris. If we leave it that way, maybe we'll remember those days, not Casablanca, not last night. Rick's reaction? Refusing to react. In the subtext, Ilsa's kind, forgiving prose is a clear goodbye. No matter how well-mannered, no matter how much her language implies her love for Rick, this is the kiss-off. Let's be friends. Let's remember the good times and forget the bad. Rick will have none of this. He reacts by refusing to react, for ignoring someone's action is, of course, a reaction. Instead, he starts the next beat. Beat number 9. Rick's action. Calling her a coward. Rick, dialogue. Did you run out on me because you couldn't take it? Because you knew what it would be like, hiding from the police, running away all the time? Ilsa's reaction. Calling him a fool. Ilsa, dialogue. You can believe that if you want to. Rick's had a year to figure out why she left him, and his best guess is that she was a coward. She, however, dares death or worse with Laszlo every day, and so she insults him in return with a cool sarcasm that implies, I don't care what you think. Fools believe such nonsense. If you want to join them, believe it too. Beat number 10. Rick's action, sexually propositioning her. Rick, dialogue. Well, I'm not running away anymore. I'm settled now. Above a saloon, it's true, but walk up a flight. I'll be expecting you. Ilsa's reaction, hiding her reaction. Ilsa drops her eyes and turns away from Rick, her face shaded by the wide brim of her hat. Despite her denials, he senses that her feelings lean the other way. He well remembers their sex life in Paris, and has seen the cool, aloof Laszlo. So he takes a chance and propositions her on the street. Again, it works. Ilsa, too, remembers, and hides her blush under her hat brim. For a moment, Rick feels she's within reach, but he can't resist sticking his foot in his mouth. Beat number 11. Rick's action, calling her a whore for the second time. Rick, dialogue. All the same, someday you'll lie to Laszlo. You'll be there. Ilsa's reaction, crushing him with the news. Ilsa, dialogue. No, Rick. You see, Victor Laszlo is my husband, and was, even when I knew you in Paris. With dignity and poise, Ilsa walks away, leaving the stunned Rick to stare after her. Rick can't contain the pain caused by Ilsa's abandonment. As in the climax of their previous scene, he strikes out with a sexual slur, implying that she'll betray Laszlo to come back to his bed. Called a slut for the second time, Ilsa reaches back for the hardest thing she has and strikes Rick with it as hard as she can. Notice, however, that this is a half-truth. She doesn't add that she thought her husband was dead. Instead, she leaves a terrible implication in her wake. She was a married woman who used Rick in Paris, then walked out on him when her husband came back. Therefore, her love was never real. We know from the subtext that the opposite is the truth, but Rick is devastated. Step 4. Note closing value and compare with opening value. The central plot turns sharply from a hopeful positive to a negative at a darker depth than Rick could have imagined. For not only does Ilsa make it clear that she doesn't love him now, she implies she never did. Her secret marriage turns their Paris romance into a sham and Rick into a cuckold. Step 5. Survey the beats and locate the turning point. 1. Selling and approaching her, ignoring him. 2. Protecting her, rejecting him. 3. Apologizing, rejecting him. 4. Excuse-making, rejecting him. 5. Getting his foot in the door, opening the door. 6. Getting down on his knees, asking for more. 7. Guilt-tripping her, guilt-tripping him. 8. Saying goodbye, refusing to react. 9. Calling her a coward, calling him a fool. 10. Sexually propositioning her, hiding her reaction. 11. Calling her a slut, destroying their love. The action-reaction pattern builds a rapid progression of beats. Each exchange tops the previous beat, placing their love in greater and greater risk, demanding more and more willpower and capacity to take painful, even cruel actions, but at the same time remain in cool control. The gap opens in the middle of the 11th beat, on the revelation that Ilsa was married to Laszlo while having an affair with Rick. Until this moment, Rick seems to be winning her over, but with this turning point, his desire is shattered.